It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 66 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Carson, we are still talking about Worlds 2017 for at least one more week.
Yeah, this week we had Kevin Leintz on, who finished top 16 again after his previous run of all the way up to the final table in the end of 2016. So two back-to-back successful Worlds for Kevin Leintz.
Two back-to-back successful Worlds with two different lists. I think that's notable.
Yep. This time he's flying Scum. We had him in to talk about his list and talk about the top 16 in general, which I think was a pretty awesome discussion.
Yeah, so here's our interview with Kevin Leintz. All right, so we're sitting down with Kevin Leintz. Kevin, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, guys.
So we're still talking about Worlds 2017. Kevin finishing top 16 again for the second Worlds in a row in, I guess, less than 6 months.
Yep. Second last year, which is November, and then we just had it in May.
You switched up from your Rebels last time, gave up on Miranda and Corrin, and joined Fenn's side, which I think is great. Why don't you tell our listeners what list you flew?
Sure. Do I say it while my sad face is on because I gave up Rebels?
Yeah.
So I flew my version of Old Man Fenn with Fenn at with Mind Link, Plasma Torpedo, Tidal, and Thrusters. Old T was standard Old T with Mind Link, Thrusters, and Tidal. Manru was Mind Link, Unhinged K4, Tactical Jammer, and Rigged Cargo, and I came in at 99.
And you were remarkable, Kevin, because you were the only person running this list at Worlds 2017, right?
Yeah, there was a few other people that it leaked out to that were playing it and were doing pretty well.
For the record, that was sarcasm in case that didn't come through. We had five similar lists make the top 16 at Worlds this year. So a very popular
archetype. Kevin's is very different than the other Fenn Tarok Manru builds. I mean, there's like two different upgrade cards, which for these archetypes is actually a big difference than the others. It's really on how the Manrus play. I mean, you actually packed a plasma torpedo on your Fenn, which most players weren't either.
You tend to favor the torpedo on Fenn. I think I've seen that in your last few iterations of Fenn Rao, right?
Yeah, we put it on before Hoth and we took it off because we were worried about bid. And then after like two games at Hoth, I immediately was like, no, we're going to put this right back on. And I haven't looked back since.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you were expecting in Swiss rounds at Worlds for as to why you picked this list?
So we know Miranda was gumming, which is why I added cargo and why I had plasma. We knew probably a lot of other scum stuff. I knew there'd be some like weird Rebel Biggs lists, which is another reason why I had plasma. I would say pretty much across the board, it was about what I expected. You had, you know, a mixture of Atani scum, you've got your Biggs lists, and then you've got sprinkling a little bit of Imperial here and there.
So the standard Fenn Old Tarok Manru builds, I like K4 and Unhinged kind of as standard on Manru.
I agree.
Along with Atani.
So you have 6 points left to tune the list out with toolbox answers for the current meta. Whether or not you save some of those for a bid is also part of that. So you elected to take the plasma torpedoes, rigged cargo chute, and tactical jammer.
Yep.
So can you talk about where those were most applicable?
So we were running tactical jammer at Hoth. It was actually a card we had been playing around with for a little while. And as soon as we started playing with it, we immediately were like, yeah, I'm not going to ever take this off Manru. Especially when we were playing with it right before they made the FAQ change. And then once they made the FAQ change, it just solidified that decision. I added the plasma because I needed to put more pressure on Miranda. I needed to immediately just get her shields down so I can deny the 5-dice missile attacks if she has one, or immediately make her be defensive. I also wanted to ignore the Biggs bubble for one turn so I could try to actually do something meaningful. And then we kept still having some issues with Miranda, so we decided to add cargo chute on to help address a K-Wing. And we actually found that it was helpful in so many matchups and just in general in so many situations.
So on that plasma torpedo, you're talking about kind of ignoring the Biggs effect for a round. Was that to try and drain shields on a Miranda mostly?
Yeah, its original intention was to just rip Miranda's shields off turn one so that I can deny her shooting a five dice, or I can immediately make her have to recharge and play defensive. In Swiss, I played two Biggs lists, both with arcs. One of them was Thane, one of them was Braylon. And in both of those games, I just ripped their shields off turn one with Fen, ignoring Biggs's ability. And in one of them, I got a crit in on the first turn as well because of it. And then we also know that there was a lot of ghosts that were in Hoth, so we weren't sure. And if you could just rip five shields off a ghost, that's really significant. And in one of my Swiss games, I used it on a defender that I had stressed to rip the rest of its shields off at range three.
Well, and kind of for the opposite reason, with Ordnance coming back at you, that's part of the reason you chose Tactical Jammer, right? For our listeners might not be familiar with that card because it doesn't see a lot of play. It's a big base only modification that obstructs attacks. So your big base obstructs attacks to other ships, you know, if the range ruler passes through the big base.
Yep. Ordnance was a big part of why we added that in, as well as TLTs. It's really hard to hit Fenrel, like if you're running a Kanan Biggs list, and Kanan is shooting at Fen or LT through the jammer, it's almost impossible for him to hit him. So it just, it upped the defense in the situations. And oftentimes, Manaru will be blocking and T will be right behind her. And then T becomes a mini Fenrel, especially if he gets range one.
Right. Well, because if both ships have bumped into Manaru, Tarok's target and then Tarok's on the other side of Manaru, that distance is within range one as long as it's not diagonal.
Correct. Right? So his ability triggers and then all the fun things with Manaru trigger, and Fen can just be a focus engine if you need it. And because of K4, you get a target lock.
Well, and one of the benefits you see, like you were saying, Old Tarok becoming kind of a mini Fenrel is you have the Tactical Jammer on there and you have a Tani Mind Link. Manaru's probably moving in there first, so she's going to be able to take the target lock or focus or whatever she needs to and then pass that on to your other ships so that even if your Old T bumps into Manaru, that's not really much of a problem because you'll still get modification on Manaru and that Tactical Jammer will still obstruct the attack. And you might even still get a range one, right?
Yep, that's exactly the idea. And at Hoth, so in nine games in Swiss, Tactical Jammer triggered 16 times. And there was, there was a couple situations where T was range one of multiple ships in arc with Tidal, plus Manaru was in between them because of the bumping situations, and he was just invincible. It was disgusting.
So that's why you made the choices. How did that pan out for Worlds? Obviously, it went decently. You made the cut. Were there any changes you would make to the list, or do you feel like it was pretty solid and you'd keep it the same?
Nope, I'd keep the list exactly the same. I wouldn't make a single change. It panned out really good. I didn't really have a matchup where I didn't have cards that were useful. Plasma, I think I fired in the rounds of Swiss. I think there was only one or two games that I didn't shoot the plasma torpedo. And I shot it in one of my games day two. Both of my games day two. And then I didn't use it in top 16. But yeah, I think every card had its place.
Do you wish you had a bigger bid?
So here's why I don't. I'm used to playing Rebels, so I'm used to moving first. And I actually want to move first because so many other Manarus want to block and they have APL and other stuff on them that makes them better blockers. But if you're giving me initiative, that means you don't get to use those tools so I can take them away from you.
Sure.
And in those situations, I can just have one of my aces out wide and then I can just slam old T into Manaru and not care because she will protect him. And then he also gets an extra evade dice that they don't get. So if they want to give me initiative, I just have to play a little bit different. But I actually think the list is constructed pretty well to respond to that.
That makes sense.
So Kevin, can we talk a little bit about the rigged cargo chute you had on Manaru? Rigged cargo chute, of course, is the illicit that allows you to effectively drop a debris cloud obstacle token as a bomb. Can you talk a little bit about how that's effective in a Tani Mind Link heavy metagame?
Sure. Typically, your Tani matchups, you've got a situation where Manor is moving early in the order, but typically you have that 1 to 2 turns where everybody's kind of shooting at each other, and now the K turns need to kind of start to happen. And you're able to use that either the turn before to deny their ability to K turn, or if they don't see it coming, catch them that turn if they have a K turn dialed in and you're stressing their entire squad. That was really, really important in a couple games. People aren't really used to it. It also has a couple other utilities, as I had mentioned, against K-Wings. But if in situations where Manor is in trouble, you can just sloop, or do the patented sloop and poop, But you can sloop and you can use the debris field as an extra obstruction for Manru herself and make her a 3-agility ship. There's lots of ways to use it. And I think on like the crate stream, it was round 3 when I faced the triple defenders that I had mentioned before. I was able to squeeze through between 2 rocks, drop the debris on a K-turning defender, and then shoot the plasma and rip off his shields at range 3 with Fenn. And he was kind of surprised at how it all came together. But that was another big use that helped and would have not been as effective if I didn't have rig cargo, because that defender was then stressed for like the next 4 turns.
Well, and looking at modern stress control, what we used to see as stress control was things like the Stress Hog Y-Wing, where you'd be using the BTL title, Twin Laser Turret, and R3A2. But that was always mid-combat stress and would usually occur pretty low in the firing sequence at like PS2 or PS4. Now we're starting to see those stress control effects, or the most meaningful ones, occur earlier on in the round. So you've got things like Asajj Ventress dealing a stress out at the beginning of the combat phase. And now you've got rigged cargo chute dealing a stress out during the activation phase, which I think is really important for not only affecting a Tani mind link list, but also cards like Expertise, which are becoming way more prevalent.
Yes, yes.
Or, of course, those slamming K-Wings, which we have thanks to Kevin here. So
yeah, I mean, the advanced slam and just getting the stress on there so they can't drop those action bombs is really important, especially if you're running Fenn in your list, because that's one of the game mechanics he's most susceptible to.
Yep. That's a huge part.
Did you run across any expertise-focused lists?
I didn't run across an expertise. I did face a quick draw, but he was at PS11. But expertise was also another reason that rigged cargo's in there, in case I had fought like a Dengar or a Rey that had expertise, or in general. That was another big thing, is being able to stop Rey from slooping or doing other things. Yeah.
Did your Fenn experience any PS11 kills where he died before you ever got to shoot?
No.
Well, lucky you.
Lucky you. The Fenn hate was real at Worlds 2017.
There was one PS11 that I faced that quick draw. And just like every other time I faced quick draw, I've been able to put him on a rock and then proceed to take his shields off while he's on the rock.
Wow. That never happens to me.
Quick draw is nasty. Hey, Radio TCX listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. First off, another target lock announcement. I have now mailed out all the target locks that I needed to send. This includes international shipping. So you guys should be receiving your target locks if you're within the United States, should be receiving them within the next 2 weeks. International subscribers, please wait a couple extra weeks there. International shipping times can vary. But at this point, we should be caught up with all the target lock shipping. So I will make an announcement in a couple weeks just to verify. And if you haven't received them yet at that point, we'll give you an avenue so you can contact us in an organized manner.
And we have some other really exciting Patreon news. The money you donate to us doesn't just go to getting fancy acrylic tokens. It's also helped us grow the show now to a pretty exciting field.
Yeah, we are now starting to live stream and commentate on Games of X-Wing. We had our first live stream this past weekend, and it was fairly successful. We're new to the world of live streaming, so we're trying to figure out all the different little quirks and whatnot. There is an archive of that stream available on Twitch, so you can find our Twitch page at twitch.tv/RadioTCX. You can find an archive of that stream. We're also going to be trying to get these archives up onto YouTube, because I know the Twitch stream eventually expires. In the future, we're planning on doing another stream in just a couple weeks here. We haven't finalized a date yet, so we're still trying to get some confirmations, but hopefully we'll be doing another live stream within the next few weeks.
So getting all this equipment, the cameras, all the different little technical features to be able to capture the live feed and bring it to you in a crisp presentation is thanks to you, our patron supporters.
We are constantly trying to improve features for Radio TCX, whether it's on the podcast front or on the live stream front now. So if you'd like to be a part of that in our efforts to expand and produce better X-Wing content, please consider going to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a patron. It really means a lot to us, and now you can see where this money's going, getting you a lot of new, great X-Wing content.
So really exciting stuff. And now, back to the cast.
So, Kevin, first of all, another huge congratulations on making your second consecutive top 16 at Worlds. That's a huge accomplishment, especially since you kind of shook up your list archetype. You flew a completely different faction, a very different kind of squad at this year's Worlds.
Although, Kevin, I will say I'm a little disappointed that you didn't fly your X-Wing 101 article.
Yeah, we had Nan Torfs basically announcing what was his list in an X-Wing 101 article months before the event.
Didn't he change it slightly, or was it the exact same?
There was like a few upgrades different, but
I think the main reason it wasn't exactly the same as his Worlds list is because he couldn't afford that in the X-Wing 101 budget of $101 for the article. You needed a couple more expansions. But the archetype was the same, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah, because Victor's going to be sad to hear this. I just don't think Ray can cut it, and I don't think a generic PS2 K-Wing can cut it either. So that's why I didn't fly my article. But my article was more meant to teach people how to play specific things, and hopefully they could gain some insight from how to block and do setups.
So we didn't actually see any Rays make it into the top 16 cut. Do you feel like Rays not a strong choice in the metagame right now?
She's strong, but not strong enough, I don't think.
Kind of a tier 2 option?
Yeah. Like, I really want her to be really good, and she can be, but I think overall she's just not quite there. You're too reliant on that luck dice of the greens to bail you out, because she'll burn down really fast.
Well, and it's just hard to be Rebels in the cut when it's all scum, right? We had 12 scum lists, 5 of which were old Fenneru, right?
Yep.
So clearly a good list choice.
Kevin, you faced off against Andrew Bunn in your top 16 match, and he was flying a list that was almost identical to yours. The only difference was he had Fenrau without the plasma torpedo, so he had his point bid down to 96. Do you think that's what ended up costing you that game?
No, absolutely not. Actually, so there's a little story to tell on that one. Andrew's from Washington, good guy, good player. He said he was, so he played Saturday, and he said he was going to fly old Duncan's Johnson until he saw me on stream against the 3 defenders, and he immediately switched to my list, but he wanted the bid, so he dropped the plasma. When we played, we both agreed after the game that it came down to 2 things. One, I outplayed him because I got exactly what I wanted, and I surprised him on turn 1 and got all 3 of my ships to unload on Manaru. And then turn 2, I got the perfect setup to happen. I stripped Fen's focus, range 1 with T and the jammer triggering. I had focus target lock, and I had teeth firing at Fen, and his Fen took 0 damage.
Ooh, that's really rough.
It was very rough. And then the next, like, he should have either been almost dead or dead. And then the next turn, I thought I had his 4K blocked, but I was barely out of it, so I didn't barrel roll, and he was able to fit a 4K. And with his Fen, he was able to critical my Fen and kill him. And that pretty much was the game right there. So it just kind of came down to dice. It was one of those situations where you don't often blame it, but like, we both talked and he's like, you outplayed me. I just got lucky with dice. And it was a little frustrating because it's like, I did exactly what I needed to win the game, except for what one thing of barrel rolling, but I set up everything I needed to, and I caught him unexpected. So you feel like you should have won, but no, I don't think the bid mattered. I've played enough to adjust how I play to account for the bid, but I mean, it doesn't hurt. It makes that matchup easier for the player that doesn't have to go first.
I think, Carson, you said it in episode a week or two ago. In order to do well at Worlds, you need a lot of skill and then a little bit of luck. And I think this is a good example of that kind of philosophy. Because by the time you hit that top 16 cut, you're no longer trying to play for average wins. You have to win every game if you want to make it to the top table.
Well, and especially in a mirror match, those games become a little bit more volatile in the variance. I mean, yeah, obviously there's definitely room to outplay you, and getting a K-turn in when your opponent wasn't expecting it is obviously huge. But those games are definitely opt to swing heavily once one player gets a little advantage. And that's just kind of the nature of mirror matches. Which, in this cut, you were likely to have one, with your list being the most common one out of the cut. So let's move on to kind of just going over all the different top 16 lists, because there was kind of some interesting distributions. We had, of course, you, other Minnesota player Kyle Limbecker, and then Travis Johnson, Andrew Bunn, and Duncan Howard on the same type old Tarok, Fenrau, and Manaru list. The other Atani scum list, we had kind of the Paratani 2.0 list, Jaren Foss with Fen, Asajj, and Old Tarok. Nick Bell, my fellow Polyb champion, did a lot better than me, flying Fenrau, Asajj, and Polyb with the Twin Laser Turret and Atani Mind Link. Then we had Mishari Alferis with Fenn Rahau, Asajj, and Contracted Scout with Inspiring Recruit and Intelligence Agent, which I thought was a pretty sweet list. And Travis Cooper flying just Paratani as it always was. Triple Scouts, we had Marcel Manzano and Wade Stover. Wade had the Boba Fett Scout, and Marcel had all plasmas, same loadout. And then, of course, we had Justin Fua, the champion, with a crazy Dengar Tel Travura K4 list. A lot of scum, a lot of mind link.
Justin also had the only scum and villainy list that didn't use a Tani mind link, which is pretty interesting when there are 12 scum and villainy lists in the top 16.
So let's start with the old Fenru. Was there any other players who you thought had an interesting take on the list, Kevin?
I mean, the version that Duncan had come up with was a little different. Otherwise, I mean, they're all kind of similar in almost every way. There's some small differences here and there, but I don't think there's any notable ones besides Duncan's.
So he has the Ion Projector, Intelligence Agent, and of course still the rigged cargo chute.
And then the aggro. He has an aggro mech on his now.
Oh, right. Okay, so that's how he's able to have such an aggressive bid.
Yep.
What do you think, aggro mech versus K4?
I would rather have K4 every day of the week.
I think so, too.
Yeah, because aggro, you can get it during combat, but typically, Manor is not the one that you want to have a target lock anyway, and it requires her to spend that focus. I often am spending my focus on defense, so at the start of combat, I immediately have a higher efficiency than you do because I have a focus target lock on one of my ships, and you'll eventually get a target lock, and if you want to keep it, you can keep it, but you can't hand it off until next turn. With Unhinged, you're doing greens all the time anyway.
Well, so there's something you said about Duncan's Manru being a bit more unpredictable by not taking the K4 maneuvers. Although I would say Manru being unpredictable is not necessarily that advantageous. Usually you know where she's going and it's still going to be great for her.
Well, and I think you still have to value Duncan's clearly valuing that bid very highly, because when you're looking at R4 Agromech, that's a 2-point investment versus K4 in combination with Unhinged, which becomes pretty necessary if you're running K4 Security Droid. You need those extra green maneuvers at your 3 speeds. That's a 4-point investment. So I think if you're just looking for trying to get that bid down, he sacrifices some of the efficiency and the timing benefits of K4 for that point efficiency of R4 Agromech.
Yep. And with Jammer, my Manru, I mean, it depends on the matchup, but my Manru is less unpredictable because I need her to be in certain places to get Tac Jammer off. And I would rather them just bump and not shoot her anyway, so she's safe, and just get K4 to trigger and then have someone be right behind her.
Okay, now if you're taking a blocking Manru, do you like Duncan or Travis's Ion Projector version, or do you like Kyle Lembecker's Anti-Pursuit version better?
I think Ion's better right now. There's more Fenn Rahau and small base ships that you need to Ion off the game, and the larger base ships, one damage here and there isn't really going to do anything.
Yeah, but one damage on Fenn, that's not bad.
Yeah, but it's only one. But if you could Ion Fenn, now that's a big deal. Because then you Ion him, and then you debris him the next turn, and then he's stressed and Ioned, and he doesn't do anything. And you know exactly where he's going.
I will have to see that one on the table.
But if you do an APL and you get one damage on him, that's great. But it's only one damage, and then he's free to run away the next turn. So, I mean, it could go either way, but I think the Ion, especially against the K-Wings, I think is probably more of why he added it. But the Ion could be more devastating, because if you catch somebody with that, it's pretty much game. But if you catch somebody with an APL...
Like Ioning K-Wings, though. That sounds
good. Yeah. Cool. Well, if you Ion and then stress a K-Wing. Like, I saw Duncan pull off the perfect sloop and poop on a Miranda. He slooped, dropped the debris on her. She goes over it. So she's double stressed. And then she bumped into Manor and took an Ion. So she's just locked down. And the game was over right there.
That makes sense. All right. I'm sick of old Tarok, Fenn, and Manor. Let's move on to Tarok, Asajj, and other fun stuff.
Yeah, so after Fenn, Old Tarok, Manaru, and the Contracted Scout, the most popular scum ship was, in the top 16 at least, was Asajj, dealing in some start of combat stress control. How do you feel about that list archetype, Fenn and Asajj, and then some third?
It's strong. I think the Foss had the best version of it, but that's using Old T again, and Carson's tired of Old T. But
No, I like Aaron Foss's list a lot.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good.
Real confident maneuver to take off auto thrusters on Old Tarok.
Yes. If your opponent can capitalize on that, it's a big weakness. But if you fly it very aggressively, which I'm sure they do, because I didn't play them, it's probably just fine.
Of course, my favorite is Nyx, because Polyb's just my personal hero at the moment. That twin laser turret, Itani, 28-point. Polyb's pretty sweet. He got that one-point bid, which was pretty nice against Jaren in his top six team. Not as great against a lot of the old Tarok Fenrau builds, but where they're able to outbid you. But one-point bid is better than nothing, which is what a lot of the other Fen Asajj builds have.
Okay, so here's a question for you, Kevin. Looking at this build, because Nick Bell's is very similar to Carson's. Nick Bell was obviously top four. Carson made 21st after Swiss. They both have Fenrau standard loadout. They both have Asajj with Itani and Lots. Do you think Nick Bell's Polyb with Itani and Twin Laser Turret is better than Carson's loadout of Polyb with Itani, Stygium Particle Accelerator, Cloaking Device, and
Dorsal Turret
Turret in there? Which one would you favor for this metagame?
I would favor Carson's, actually. I think his has a lot more capability in it. I mean, he's not going to do damage like the other Palop would.
That's right.
But let's be honest, I don't think Palop is there to do one or two damage a turn. He's there for his other shenanigans. I wonder, Carson, would it have been better to put an Auto Blaster on him instead?
No. I don't think so. And it's mostly because Rebels.
Okay, sure.
Against the big squads, you need all three of your ships who have pilot skill advantage on a lot of them to be able to dish out the damage. That's my thought on Dorsal versus Auto Blaster.
And it's fine. I could see that too.
The lack of the bid is pretty rough, though.
There's high agility ships, but when you take their focus tokens, the Dorsal turret hits about the same.
Okay.
But, I mean, who am I to critique when Nick gets better results? So just one thing on Paratani. Mishari's list had that inspiring recruit on the scout. Just want to say I called inspiring recruit making in the cut, and there it is.
You did. Well done, Mishari. Can confirm.
Didn't see any Rorik, and we already talked about Justin's list in our previous episodes, but I just want to say that list is beautifully sculpted for this meta.
Yeah, it's a strong call.
High bid to answer Fenrau, and really resilient to all the stress control. K4 is pretty good in a stress meta.
Well, and Justin's clearly a competent player. Besides his skill, Kevin, what do you think lent itself to Justin's list performing so well at Worlds?
So the pieces in the list is that burst. I mean, he's got super high offense at PS9, so he could alpha ships off the board. Dengar's ability plus expertise is a really good combo. He's got action economy even if he's stressed, because K4 and unhinged is the correct call. And let's be honest, with two ships that are turrets, it's an easier list to play probably over the long haul, because you don't have to think about as many ships. You only have to worry about two. So that can be easier. I think that was a really good call as far as the meta goes, but I think it was a good call for a long tournament.
And I didn't get to watch too many of his games, but I would say his execution was pretty spot on. He didn't really miss anything. And he was definitely calling his opponent's maneuvers very well. Definitely a sharp player.
Clearly has a good understanding of like the technical aspects of the game.
Yeah, I think this list is just beautiful.
Why aren't you playing it then, Carson?
Well, it's not my style, but I think it is a...
Winning isn't Carson's style.
He has solved the meta... He solved the meta puzzle of Worlds brilliantly. We all, you know, tried to design the perfect list.
It was very Heaver-esque in that regard.
Right. It's one of those where after you've seen the solution, it makes perfect sense. Obviously, you have to execute it well to get there, but I think, man, that's a well-done list, Justin.
That does point out something important. So the last, basically, 4 years of Worlds, the winner has not ran, maybe even 5 years, has not ran a net list or carbon copy list. I mean, you could argue Denguru, kind of, but he had a very different version of Denguru.
Right, it wasn't the stock version.
Right. Or if we exclude Denguru, all the other ones are not meta lists per se.
Right. Well, and I think when we get to Rebels, we'll see that Nand has done 2 years in a row taking a meta list and tweaking it to be very different and how it plays on the table.
Yeah, let's talk about Rebels here. There were only three Rebel lists in the top 16. Obviously, the one that performed the best was Nand Torf's Miranda Biggs Jess Pava list, which made it to the final table. But he loaded out his Miranda very different than I would have expected. Did you feel the same way, Kevin?
Yeah. The no advance slam is the one thing that really got me. Like, I get what he's doing.
More than Auto Blaster turret?
No, I get the Auto Blaster turret. It's the advance slam. Like, I cannot run a Miranda without Advanced Slam. It's just too awesome.
Well, the burden of execution just skyrockets then, too. You really need to be good about dropping those bombs. He still has it loaded out with ion bombs and cluster mines, so he still expects to be dropping those bombs, but without the advanced slam, it's a lot harder to decide when to drop those bombs.
Well, and you saw it in the finals. He was okay not using TLT because he was recharging on his torpedo shots. And if that's kind of your mindset going in of, okay, I'm going to kind of just go at my opponent and I'm going to use that torpedo to recharge, I don't really need TLT because late game I'll mop up with bombs and the auto blaster. Makes sense. I could see it.
It's an interesting strategy too, because I wouldn't even have thought about that with plasma torpedo. Like, even if you're just reducing that number of attack dice to 3, you can still drop 4 shields on a ship. Like, and that's usually enough to clear a lot of the common ship types.
Yep, and he had guidance chips.
Yeah, I would be hard-pressed to keep that pattern analyzer on Jess while Miranda's missing that advanced slam.
Yeah, I would have, in my opinion, I would have put the advanced slam on Miranda and I would have dropped pattern analyzer on Jess. Because you still have M9G8, but he got further, so.
But those Miranda torpedoes are pretty well modded. You got the Ray bringing up a focus, M9G8 getting an extra reroll plus guidance chips. That's pretty great.
Yep.
Can we talk about Jess Pava, the secret MVP of Worlds 2017?
Yeah, and of the Rebels in general. Yeah.
Yeah, she was in a whole bunch of lists.
It's weird. I mean, there's nothing really fancy about Jess. She's just kind of efficient, and it turns out that's good enough. Yeah, we saw two Jesses make the cut. Nan's having that M9G8 pattern analyzer integrated. Always has a focus token, basically, even when stressed. And then that target lock, I think, always just goes on Miranda, basically, to mod her up.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what he was doing, was using that to mod her up for the auto blaster or her torpedoes.
Or at least that was the most common use. And obviously, Nan did very well. Took a lot. It really, this list hunted Fangs pretty well. And then, of course, Gary Russell in the top 4, who lost to Nand, had kind of your 4-ship Biggs list with Biggs R4-D6 integrated, just a plain Captain Rex, Jess Pava with R2-D6, so the one that gives an elite pilot talent, granting adaptability, integrated astromech, and pattern analyzer, and then Braylon Strom with Gunner R3-A2 and the Alliance Overhaul title.
I actually played that exact same list from his buddy in my last round of Swiss on day one.
What did you
think
about
it? Yeah, it's pretty good, right? There's a lot of different threats in that list.
It's an effective list, and it's efficient at what it does. I can see how it could catch people and really kind of just beat them down, lock them down and beat them down.
I think the Captain Rex in combination with Biggs is pretty debilitating a lot of the times, because if you can get that Captain Rex shot off and then they have to shoot Biggs and they're getting their weapon value downgraded, that just means Biggs is going to live that much longer.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Jess and Braylon are just gunning away.
Yeah, Braylon's pretty effective. If he can get arc on Fenn and he's not getting shot back at, there's a very good chance that either he's going to do some damage on Fenn or he's going to get Fenn double stressed, which makes his next turn that much harder.
That's a good analysis of how it functions. And it does that too a lot. It just picks the ace. It becomes the new Stress Hog. Argue that it might actually have a little bit better damage than the Stress Hog might.
I think so.
And the pilot skill bump is not insignificant either. Shooting with a regular Stress Hog at pilot skill 2, sometimes the Stress Hog will even die before it gets to shoot, whereas there's a good chance Braylon's going to get at least to fire once or twice.
And the ninth hull point is big against munitions.
Yep, and that back arc is much harder to play around.
Is this your favorite take on the 4-ship Biggs list?
Not really. I'm not a big fan of the captured TIE, or the TIE in general.
Really?
It's okay. I don't feel like it does enough.
I feel like that's what's pushed the archetype into tier 1.
I would not consider it tier 1.
It's in here in the cut.
It did make the cut. It got crushed when I played it.
All right.
I think it's I think people have not really played against jousting control lists very much, so they may have kind of forgotten how to play against them.
It is a very different game than playing against scum aces, right?
Yeah. And I think if you play a couple games against it, you kind of understand how to attack it. But I think its offense is a big issue. I mean, if you can lock somebody down, that helps, but its offense really, really suffers.
And then, of course, our last Rebel list, James Machette flying Dash Rendar, Lone Wolf, Ray Crew, Heavy Laser Cannon, Outrider title, and Miranda Donnie, Sabine Wren, Twin Laser Turret, Advanced Slam, Seismic Torpedoes, Cluster Mines, and Extra Munitions. So here we see Miranda showing up again, that Rey crew, which has been very powerful and impactful for the Rebels, on Dash now, which is a pretty good slot for Dash's crew.
Yeah, the Dashes that I was messing around with before Worlds all had Rey on it.
Is Lone Wolf now the best way to run Dash?
I think it's been the best way since forever. I've always run Lone Wolf instead of Push. I think I ran Push way back when Dash first came out. And then I switched to Lone Wolf and I've never gone back since. I just think there's too many ways that he can get stressed. And Lone Wolf is so powerful on a turret like Dash where he's always at range and it's easy to keep him away from anybody else. So he's always triggering it.
Well, and you can't discount the defensive rerolls. That's a huge part of it, too, because I think Push Dash often struggles on the defensive part, because if you're getting focused target lock, you're not getting much defensive modification.
Yep. And then so in a reroll offense, defense, double focus dash is a statistically pretty durable and effective dash.
And then how do you feel about the seismic torpedoes on this list? I feel like that's almost anti-synergistic with Dash. But maybe that catches people off guard.
It catches people off guard, but it's kind of the APL situation, right? Yeah, you could use it to maybe get a damage or two in. Maybe it's more of a surprise factor. Maybe that messes people up so that you can catch them with the bomb and then kill them with the bomb. But yeah, I agree. It definitely is anti-synergistic with Dash, and with the advanced slam, it's kind of cool. Nobody really sees like a three bank blow up a rock coming. So you could catch people off guard, but I think it's harder to use or less effective overall because it's less accurate. I mean, it's only a 50% chance if it does work and you might hit yourself or another ship.
But that is pretty exciting to use that off an advanced slam, though.
Yeah, it's pretty cool off advanced slam. I could see that.
What are your thoughts on the Rebels?
I think Rebels are in a really hard spot, just like I think Imperials are in a tough spot as well. I think we're going to keep seeing some of these four-ship Rebel lists. I think you're going to continue to see Miranda Dash for a while until something changes. We might see one other archetype with the turrets coming back, maybe for Rebels, but I think right now this is probably the best the Rebels have to offer. It's pretty much a Miranda or Big Show right now.
I think that's very much true. And looking at the only Imperial list that made it into the top 16, Tyler Tippett's Rear Admiral Chirinau Whisper combo, I'm kind of shocked we even saw one Imperial list, because it was starting to look like we weren't going to see any representation from that faction in the top 16.
Yeah, and Tyler talked about how he barely made it, I think, because his MOV was really bad. It's a tough road. I'm surprised he made it too with that list specifically. But I mean, it shows how powerful Whisper still is, given she doesn't get a really bad matchup, but how powerful Rack and Kylo can be.
Well, and his Whisper didn't have a crew on it either. It was just Fire Control System, Advanced Cloaking Device, and Veteran Instincts. And I think he was at 100 points. So, I mean, that's even harder there, where you got no bid on Whisper, so you're not controlling initiative in any way.
Yeah, he was at 100. I think he uses the Pelp as like a pseudo crew for Whisper. I think he was trying to save it for defense or offense if she needed it. Like, he would use Blinded Pilot defensively so that he could stop her from getting shot on a turn that she really needs to not get shot. So maybe the Pelp is acting as a invisible crew on Whisper.
Right, and I think you're basically just using, when you, in that Fen matchup where Whisper is most at risk, you're kind of just using Rack as just a way to erase Fen, and then, or at least get a blinded through so that Whisper can attempt to then close out that game.
Yeah, or drop him down to zero.
Right, that works too. And then hopefully you still have a little bit of your Decimator remaining at that point. Yeah, definitely not an easy road for that list to make it all the way here. Were you surprised there weren't any quick draws making the cut, or?
A little bit. I expected the Imperial list to be some kind of like a triple ordnance ace list. I'm kind of surprised, yeah, that the list wasn't a quick draw or some other burst offense list. I'm surprised that it was Whisper and a Decimator, but it makes sense. I think we're going to see a lot more Imperial bursts, though, like I talked about before.
Yeah, it seems like the faction is definitely trending that way in light of all the Satani stuff, that they're going to more high damage output early turns rather than that kind of long-term durability.
Yeah, you have to. It's now become an arms race, I think.
Well, and part of that is the offense is more consistent, whereas now their defense is kind of more volatile. And so especially in these tournaments with a really high round count, we're talking 9 rounds of Swiss to make it into the cut. For your defense to hold up through all 9 of those rounds is kind of asking a lot, whereas those TIE SFs with Fire Control System, or here we have Whisper with Fire Control System, and using even Palp on offense is more consistent and will yield kind of similar results game after game. So I think that's probably why we're not seeing the defensive end do as well.
So I think it's worth talking about. We've kind of seen the SF go from zero to hero in a matter of one expansion. I mean, I don't know that lightweight frame magically fixed that, but was it people were just discounting it and not fully giving the SF time, or was the meta just not right until recently?
Well, you can put me down as discounting it. It took me a good while to even open that expansion. Now, with the lightweight frame, there is a big difference between 2 and 3 defense dice, but it's not heavily modified because it's not getting the evade token that defenders had, which gave their defense dice a lot of value.
Well, I think the quick draw just goes to show that the attacking twice in a turn with both your regular attack and then when you drop your shields attacking again is a super valuable skill. We obviously see that in spades with Dengar, but seeing that immediate comeback on a Fen Rao, like Fen Rao at most is going to have probably 2 focus tokens most of the time, and he's going to spend 1 maybe on offense. So if you get him to, you attack him once, even if it misses, that second shot's likely going to stick some damage through.
Right, and that second shot could have set up a homing missile coming back at you. The first shot could trigger fire control system, and then the second one's a missile.
I think he's a threat. He's a real threat. I think, can we agree? I think SFs have become one of the staples now of Imperials, at least for the time being.
Yeah, still not sure why, but yes. Put me down as that.
So, Kevin, just kind of closing thoughts here, looking at what you saw at Worlds 2017 and going into this new store championship seasons. How do you feel about the state of the metagame as it is? Do you have any concerns?
I have many, many concerns. I think we're going to see the same thing till probably an FAQ comes out. We're going to see probably this meta for, what, a couple months at least, I would guess. Probably like Gen Con maybe we'll see an FAQ. I don't know. I mean, I think the top 16 kind of tells you everything you need to know, that Scum is still extremely powerful and they push most of their factions out of the game. I mean, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but I myself am not really happy with the meta and kind of where it's at. I'm hoping we see some more big shakeups like the last FAQ, but I just don't like to see Rebels or Imperials so down. I'd like to see a much closer to 30% balance across everybody. I think the other thing that's been kind of tough is, like I had mentioned earlier, is every Rebel list now is either Miranda or Biggs or both. And I wish we could see more consistent, high success level diversity of lists, but I think the meta has kind of pushed people into some corners where they don't have as many options, list building variety.
How do you feel about arcs?
So I think arcs are good. I have a list that's close, but not quite there with an arc. I think arcs have surprised people, especially myself, with how effective they can be. I think down the road, they're going to continue to be like a really dominant ship. I think they're really cool in their utility.
I can definitely see where you're coming from, though, Kevin. A lot of people saying this is a two-faction metagame. I might even go as far to say it's more of a Fen Rao list versus a Miranda or Biggs list metagame.
Yeah, but I think, you know, people like Alex and Tate should get some credit. They've kind of pioneered that Imperial Burst, and it'll find a niche. I just would like to see more variety. Like Jamie kind of got pushed off his Ryad, Jax, Palp list, and that was kind of sad because like he flew that for over a year and he was really good with it. And it's tough. Like I had to get off Miranda Corrin, but it's kind of hard to see people that have found something they really, really, really like. And it's a pretty clever and diverse list, and now they kind of have to move off it because it just can't compete anymore. I would rather see people move off it because they want to try something different or they want to do something different with their list or go a different direction, not necessarily because they feel like it just can't compete anymore.
I guess that's just a reality of a continually evolving game.
That's probably true.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being on the show this week, and another huge congratulations for making top 16 again for the second time, I guess, inside of a year here. It's a really big accomplishment, especially since you broke it up with 2 different lists.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Worlds is one of the best experiences you can have, and I think, you know, NAND at the final table was a good example of that, and I don't know how many people could see it like on off camera a little bit. Nand and I were joking the entire match and we had a lot of fun. And I think everybody that goes always enjoys that experience, whether they do good or not.
I think that was one of my favorite moments of Worlds, was Nand giving you grief at the final table.
It was a lot of fun. We gave each other some grief. It was good. I really like Nand. He's a good guy.
Thanks, Kevin, for being on the show.
No problem. See you guys soon.
Another huge thank you to Kevin for being on the show again. That was a really insightful conversation, and I'm really glad he was able to share his thoughts about Worlds 2017.
Yeah, always insightful and great to have him back on the show. Thanks again, Kevin.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review, along with a little comment saying what you like about the show and why others might be interested in listening.
This week, I want to give a shout out to Mollaman14, who thought we were one of the best, if not the best, X-Wing podcast around. So thank you, Mollaman14.
And thank you to everyone else who left a review. It really means a lot to us.
And if you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and become a supporter of the show today.
And Radio TCX is now live streaming. We have just one live stream up at this point, but you can check out an archive of that footage at twitch.tv/RadioTCX. We're also going to try and get those archives up on YouTube soon. Again, guys, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll talk to you next week.